So we're doing a change in approach. We spent a lot of time talking about positive mitzvos on Shabbos, but now for this month we're going to continue with the melachos, the 39 melachos. So I thought it'd be a good introduction just to go over something we've been discussing on the Shabbos mornings, the chibur after davening. So from the Sefer Zichru Toras Moshe, right? That's the Rav Avraham Danzig, Zatzal. He wrote the Chai Adam, Nishmas Adam, Chachmas Adam, Binas Adam. So we're going to go back and just review something here about an introduction to Melachos Shabbos. It says, Tziva Yotzvein, it's on the source sheet. Tziva Yotzvein is Shlulasa is Melacha B'Shabbos, right? There's a commandment not to do any Melacha. Omnam Einam Nikreis Melacha Kvi Koitzer Datenu. Melacha is not defined by the smallness of our minds, what we consider to be a Melacha. Shehari HaMefane Kelim Kol HaYom Beiso Potter. If you would be going around, you know, rearranging all your furniture in your house the entire day, it's technically speaking, you're potter. You didn't violate a malach on that, right? Hamotzi macha mirashus hayach l'shus rabim chayv. You took a small little needle in your pocket and carried that with no air from the house into the street, that you're chayv for that. So you ask the average person on the street, what's a bigger malacha? Schlepping around, rearranging bookshelves and furniture and couches and sofas, that's malacha. What, carrying a little pin? Carrying a needle? It's ridiculous. However, we don't define the malacha. I heard a beautiful mashal from Rav Moshe Wolfson Shlita, talking about the perspective. He says, imagine a person was like there's a beautiful painting, a masterpiece, and then a fly comes and lands on one small little black dot on this masterpiece. And they would say, this is a gorgeous piece of art. This is a masterpiece. People line up and spend hours just to have a chance to look at this wonderful painting. And the fly says, it's nothing, it's a black dot. Okay, you're right. From a fly's perspective, it's all it is. It's a black dot, but anyone has a broader perspective. So in halacha, we have to have a broader perspective. And the Chazal understood what's considered to be a malacha and what's not considered to be a malacha. That's important to keep in mind. Lots of times, like, what do you mean? What difference does it make whether it goes this way or that way? Oh, wow. The Sar HaMashkim is here. Look at that. Wow. So who defines malacha? The Torah defines it for him. And he goes through and counts, defines what the 39 malachas are. And what the categories are there as well. So with that, we're going to begin. The first source on the sheet is the Mishnah. And the Mishnah tells us, counts out what the malachos are. It tells us the number, then counts them out. And the Gemara asks, well, what does it have to tell me both? Like, I can count. I know how to do the numbers myself. If you tell me there's 39 malachos, we have to spell out for the 39. So the Gemara explains, well, if you did every single thing wrong in the world on Shabbos, the most you'd be chayv is 39 korbanos, because everything is either an av or a tolda, a subcategory of this. So says the Mishnah, avos malachos aboim choser achas. There are 39 malachos, and then it counts out for us what they are. Hazorah. Zorah is when you're planting a seed. Chorish, when you're plowing the land. Kotzer is when you're cutting down the wheat. Ma'amir is when you gather it together. Dosh is when you trample on it to squeeze out. Zora is where you winnow, you throw something up into the air. Borer is when you separate. I think next month we're going to do Hilchos Borer. It's also a very complex malacha. Tochin is grinding up something. Raki, Halosh, Ofe. Ofe is, in English, what's an ofe? What profession is that? Baker, right. So baking. So baking is the one. If you go through all these, there's the progression of planting a seed till turning it into the actual food, right? And that's what it is, the seed and then working the land and harvesting the seed, etc., until finally you get to the point where you can make bread. So the Gemara explains that's why these first 11 malachos, right, 11 out of 39, are all what's called sidra de pas, the order of bread, the processes that go into from start to finish till making a bread. Omer of Papa, Shavik Tan Didon Bishul, Samamanim, the Havi B'Mishkan, B'Nakit B'Oifes. So we have the 39 malachas as a machloikis as to whether or not that was done in the setting up of the Mishkan or whether it was done in the ongoing maintenance of the Mishkan. Whichever way you look at it, these first 11 are either the making of the Samamanim, the dyes that were used in the Mishkan, or it's for the Lechem Haponim. So there's no nafkamina, it's a discussion as to what these 11, how they were used. Right, but at the end of the day, there's no nachmini because it's all osir. But just the discussion was, so whether it's using for the samamanim or whether it's used for the lechem haponim, it says, Tana sidur de pas nokot. We're dealing here with sidur de pas, the order of baking bread. Now, it's important just to understand before we really get into some of the technical details of Bishul. It's one of the most important halachas because nobody likes to sit and have cold cereal, right, for three meals on Shabbos. You like cold cereal?
No. I guess this past Friday night.
Oh, when you lost power.
Yeah, I lost power.
You lost power. So, I mean, between me and you, it wasn't probably so geschmack to have cold cereal for your Shabbos meal.
Yeah.
No, so you have to know halachos bishul. I mean, many halachas that we learn, it's important, but they're not nogeya to us. You know, a person sits and learns halachos eruvin. It's important to know halachos eruvin, but really, not, you're not coming down in your own, the privacy of your own home. You're not really dealing with these the intricacies of halachos eruvin, kudasik, mechitza. It doesn't come up. Halachos bishul, we know, comes up every single week. Right, so to know these and to understand it, we'll try to spread it over the month to cover on one specific aspect of it. Like to first go through the deraisa level of bishul, and then that'll probably take a week or two, and then we'll go to the derabbanans, what are the restrictions that we do. And so, again, the focus obviously halach lemaisa to know what we do and what we don't do. Somebody, I should say, sometimes the question will come up: if a person's going to be eating out at someone's house. And the kashrus, they have no problem with. They understand this person's God, but they don't say, maybe they don't really know Hilchos Shabbos so well. So what should we do? The best is, it's more, I don't want to say it's like the correct way. It's less problematic on Friday nights. There's more that could go wrong with reheating and stuff like that on Shabbos day. Most things, so I tell them, if you're really not sure that Hilchos Shabbos, you want to go, try to go for a Friday night rather than Shabbos day, because there's less complicated things that could come up. But that's when we talked about the rabbinic restrictions. But Deraisa, we'll go through now and see what happens. Okay, so we'll start with the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos, source number 3. Perek Tes Halach Aleph. Echad ha'oifes ha'pas, o ha'mevashel es ha'maychel, o es ha'mamonim, o mechachmeim, es ha'mayim, ha'kol inyan echad hu. So all these things, talking about changing the property with heat. So the Rambam's telling us whether it's Ofe is baking. There's no liquids whatsoever. That's, you're making bread, your brownies, or I don't know what else, cookies, whatever. That's an ofe, right? That's pas. Mevashlas ha'maychel, that's what we're talking about with liquid. That's a soup, that's a water, that's something that has gravy, that's meatballs and sauce, something like that. Also samanim, you're doing the dyes. Mechames ha'mayim, you're heating up water, you have hot iron, you're making coffee. It's all the same topic. The definition of bishul is changing the property of an item through using heat. And it's not only edible food. Bishul could apply to non-edible items as well. What would be an example of that? Could you think of an example where you use bishul heat to change the property of an item?
And you're not... Dyes.
The dyes, okay, right? There's one.
If you're a goldsmith.
You're goldsmith, exactly. That's the one that talks about why... They used to melt down the lead to pour down people's throats to kill them.
Oh.
Yummy. Anybody want more bagels? No, just kidding. Some Hamantaschen? Want lead Hamantaschen? No, just kidding. We don't do this nowadays.
It was done on Shabbos.
Oh. So therefore they couldn't, that's why they didn't do it. That's what they didn't do it because you had to do bishul in order to get the special things. So again, just to, right, like Menachem said, the samamanim, the melting down of other things. So more, I would say 98% of the time, we're not going to use bishul for non-food items, but it does apply for that as well to use heat. Sometimes it could come with heating up, let's say like a person wet clothing or something like that, they want to put on a radiator to heat it up or to dry it off. The discussion about that as well, but I'm not going to go into those things. I want to stay more on the food items right now. But the Ma'isa, the Klal Yisrael has warm food. We use Hilchos Bishul, right? So in this week's Parsha says, V'lo sevav eish b'chol mosh v'seichem, right? Not to have any fire in your house on it. So there was a group of Jews who took that literally. You know what it was called? The Tzedukim, right? The Tzedukim denied Torah, and they said, oh, it says in the Torah, you're not allowed to have any fire in your house. So it must be you can't have any warm food on Shabbos, because to have warm food means you have to have fire. So they would enjoy their hamantaschen and their cheese and crackers and their fill-in-the-blank, I don't know, cereal with milk. That's all they had. They would not have hot food on Shabbos, because this week's Parsha, right? Parsha's Be'akil. So there's a famous Balma Or, which it's here on the source sheet. The Ramah quotes this literally. in Hilchos Shabbos, says the Baal Hamor, one of the greatest of Rishonim, he says, Yesh Oimrim, Kitakonas, Raboseinu, He La'anagas HaShabbos Bechamin, to enjoy Shabbos with warm, hot food. It's actually, I think, in the Sephardim, don't call it Chont, they call it Chamin. Right? Am I right? I think so, yeah? So, we once had a group of, when I was teaching in Hillel, so we had a group of girls over for Shabbat. They didn't come for Shabbos, they came for Shabbat. And my wife was serving all these things, they wouldn't touch it. And like, but then all of a sudden she put out, it was like rice, and then it was like meatballs on top or something like that. So you and I, we call it like, you know, rice and meatballs. But by then there was like some special food. Oh, this is chamin. They all, that was the one thing they would eat. But there's an Indian. Everyone should have hot food on Shabbos. Here we go. V'chol mi she'enu ochel chamin. If a person does not eat hot, warm foods on Shabbos, tzorich bedika achar v'imhumin. You have to see if this person's not bikkuris. You have to see if this person is a heretic. Now, what does it mean you have to see what they did? If they're not eating it because they don't like hot food, okay, I talk about you're not required to eat foods you don't enjoy on Shabbos, right? Except maybe fish. Maybe you shouldn't push yourself to eat fish on Shabbos because you need to eat fish, even if you don't like it. But I'm just kidding. But if a person says, I don't eat hot foods, so one second, why are you not eating hot foods? Are you not eating hot foods because you just doesn't appeal to you? You don't like soup? You don't like chont? You don't like this? Or I don't eat hot foods because I don't believe you're supposed to have fire in your house on Shabbos. So the Ramah says, if a person's not eating it because they're like b'shita, we don't, so then you have to check. Maybe this person really is a Karaite, someone who doesn't hold from Torah Shabbat Peh. But if a person just says, I don't enjoy this, a person's not required to. We had the shiurim on owning Shabbos and kavod Shabbos. We saw that this person's supposed to eat foods they enjoy, supposed to do activities they enjoy. We saw Rabbi Akiva used to cry on Shabbos because that was an owning for him. He enjoyed crying or released certain, emotions, whatever reason. But if a person says, you're not required to eat hot food, but if you don't, so it says, and this is quoted, this Baal Hamor is famously quoted by the Ramah in Hilchos Shabbos, that a person has to be careful if you see somebody like that. So let's try to understand what the Gedorim are. For every single malacha we have, there's a shear that has to do a certain amount. In other words, for example, let's just talk about a simple example of writing, right? So if a person would, a pencil's muksa, but a person were to take a pencil, so there's a certain amount you have to actually write in order to violate the malacha deraisa of kosev. Right, if I just make a little line like that, so that's not a deraisa, right? Okay, so what's the shear? What's the amount that a person has to do to violate? How much do I have to change the property of an item using heat to violate the malacha of bishul? So what would you say? What would be the amount you'd have to change something using heat? Meichel ben Drusoy, very good. So Meichel ben Drusoy, Gemara Menachos and Nun Zayin says that there was this bandit. His name was Ben Drusoy. We don't really know his that's his name. So Michael Ben Drusoy was the food that he used to eat because he was always on the run. The police were after him because he drove his BMW into a parking lot and left it there, so the police were chasing him. But he always had to eat food at the split second to become edible because, what's the cow? Jesse James, right? He's always being chased by the police. Hamevin Yofin. He's running around. So there's a machloikis, Rashi and the Rambam, as to what level that is.
Who studied this?
What's that?
Who studied how much? How
so well, if I asked you, what percentage would you say, Joy, does food have to be? How much does an item have to be cooked?
None of us have a measuring, you know what I'm saying? And different foods would have different...
Well, there's a steak. Let's say a steak. I wouldn't eat a raw steak.
Time, but probably people have it, what, medium rare is very
okay, popular. So what percentage is medium rare? Like, let's say it takes an hour to cook a steak.
I know.
Anyway, we need Lawrence here for our food questions. According to this, Rashi says...
It's all objective, anyway. I mean, you can't measure something like that.
Well, Michael Minnesota, however this guy would eat it at. So he would eat, according to Rashi, he would eat it when the food was one-third.
One-third.
One-third cooked. So if normal food was supposed to cook for an hour, he would eat it 20 minutes because he couldn't wait an hour. He had to get 20 minutes and he's got to go eat his food and run to the next location. The Rambam says that it is half cooked. So using an example, it would be 30 minutes according to the Rambam for this. If the food was taking an hour. It could be a two-hour food. Right? You just plug in the formula. So that's our criteria. If I was to take food that was inedible and using heat to make it either one-third cooked or a half-cooked on Shabbos, that would be an Isser Deraisa of Michael Mendersoy for a solid food. Right? Now, That would be for a solid. What about for a liquid? So for a liquid, doesn't make sense to talk about liquid. I could have a hot coffee, I could have a cold coffee, right? I could have a hot tea, I could have a cold tea.
Soup.
I could have, it's not so geschmack, but you could have hot soup, you have cold soup. So for I didn't make it edible. It's edible cold. It's drinkable room temperature. So according for a liquid, what would you say would be the criteria? It's again, for by solids, you can't eat certain foods. If it's a, you know, a raw potato or something, you have to make things. So I'll have a, you know, something undercooked. You'll eat it, but it's not something, okay, it's edible. For liquids, what would you think the shear would be in order to violate the Issur D'oraisa of Bishul and Shabbos for a liquid?
You could have different starting points. I mean, you could have a liquid that's 33 degrees, let's say.
Okay. Right.
And you could have a liquid that's 70 degrees and heat the 33 heating up to 50, let's say.
Or the
70 up to 100, you know. I mean,
so neither one of those would violate 50 to 30 to 50 or 70 to 100 would not violate the Issur D'oraisa of Bishul. Yad Seled Esbo, right? Yad Seled Esbo literally means the amount when your hand would recoil. Right when it would pull back. Shal, can you look? Do they have the 39 Malachas book here? Maybe in the back. Can you look up the Bishul? I wanted to something else. I'm actually read.
You had the liquid that was.
It's in the 39 Malachas. Rabbi Yehuda Sefer. I want to look. Thank you. What's that?
If you had a liquid that was Yatzalet Espo and you heated it further, that would also not.
Correct. So
it has to start from.
It has to start from under Yad Seled Esbo and bring it to the point where it is Yad Seled Esbo. That would be the. So for your two examples, we'll give. That's why I want to show. If we have the safe here, I'll show you the. He gives examples of hot items. What level it is, but from 30 degrees to 50 degrees is not Yad Seled Esbo,
right.
And even from what did you say 70 to 100?
Yeah. Right.
100 degrees. Your body temperature is 98.6. Right, so breaking something up to 90 to 100 is also not Yad Seled Esbo. So I'm going to skip for a second. Let's go to the last source on here, Rav Moshe, the Tshuva at the bottom. Let me go back one before that. The Gemara is in source number 9. Omer of Yehuda Omer Shmuel, right? Echad Shemen veEchad Mayim. Whether we're dealing with shemen, oil, or whether we're dealing with water, Yad Seled Esbo, if you took it up, it's osur, yeah? Thank you. If you took it up to Yad Seled Esbo, it's what's it called? Osur, Yad, ain't Yad Seled Esbo, it's mutter. So that's fine. You don't read Yad Seled Esbo. So what's the definition? Motion says in the Igros Moshe, Or Chaim Chelik Dalad, Tshuva, Meharoy Lahachmir, one should be strict, Kid Meduni, Bashir, Kuf Yud. 110 degrees. 110 degrees. Right. Mem gimel mal Celsius. Okay. Right. Hukavar chum gadol. That's already hot enough. Sheish lechush liyad seledes. Maybe that's already the 110 is not so hot. Kedima shibat kona batzmenu.
Yeah, we have shower temperatures.
Oh, that's what's right here. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Here, this. Let me finish the remotion. Then thank you, Sean, for bringing this. I'll read you what he brings here. Practical examples. Now on the other side, Bahasafek Eish Lechush Ad Kuf Samech, you can go up to 160. 160 degrees Yad Seled Esbo. Ayin Aleph Malus Celsius, that's 71 Celsius. Kimidas Kuf Samech Kuvada Yad Seled Esbo Aflakula. So it depends. Rav Willi was when learning Hilchos Bishul, he said, how do you have such a huge gap? We Yad Seled Esbo from 110 to 160? That's huge. We're off by 5, 10 degrees, but a 50 degree range for Yad Seled Esbo, Sir Willig suggested, could be as follows. Could be whether you're expecting it to be hot or not. If someone tells you, I'm going to put something hot on your hand, right? And then you're like, okay, so I'm braced for it. I can feel it's a little hot thing. I can hold it. They constantly try to warm up. Well, you increase the heat a little bit, right? So then you can hold on to it. But 160, right? So if you're expecting it, maybe up to 160. If you're not expecting it, so even 110, your hand would you pull back. That's the way Rabbi Rehulig suggested why there might be such a large range. But we have to be careful for both things, because sometimes it's a kula and sometimes it's a chumra. When we get to reheating and stuff like that, we'll come back to these measurements. But this is what I was thinking of.
Now, if you increase slightly increase the heat continuously, a person could take a temperature higher than they normally would be able to.
Right, so up to 160.
There's still like they take a lobster and you put it into boiling hot water, it'd immediately jump out. But if you put it into nice water and you just increase the heat gradually, he'll stay in there until he boils to death.
That's the frog experiment, right?
Well, maybe the frog and I do. Yeah.
They slowly raise the temperature.
They put them in a little boys. I'm sorry about this gross example, especially eating your hamantaschen. But they used to do an experiment like this. It's a powerful mussar, but they would put the frog into a Bunsen burner, right? It's called right the thing.
Bunsen burner,
and they would gradually increase the heat. So the frog gets comfortable with surroundings, and it just stays with things. It's getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And the frog doesn't have enough common sense. It doesn't make a thing to get out. It ends up like Nachum said. The frog dies. They boil it up to death. It's in boiling hot water. So they have mussar. You know, a person can be accustomed to a situation that's not right. Something that's improper. Something that's tame. Something that's not a good, healthy, and abusive relationship. And it gets hotter and hotter and hotter. Get out. Get out of the relationship. Leave. Do something. Make a change in life. No. Conflict is hotter than Nebuch. It gets worse and worse and worse. That's one of the things they talk about. So let me read you a few. He has seven examples of things just to try to place in context of Bishul B'Shabbos. Lukewarm bath water for a young child, 99 to 100 degrees. That's it.
Who says this?
This is a Rabbi Ribiat Sefer, page 558. So no, Yatzla's was still 110, but just in terms of what we could... By definition, you wouldn't bathe in Yatzla's but water because you have to... jumped out of the thing. You couldn't stand it.
But it's also the fact that certain individuals are going to have a different tolerance level.
That's true as well. That's true.
You know, I lived in Japan, and they go into baths at night that an American, they would scald themselves. I mean, they can't.
It's like a Japanese thing to go into hot water?
Yeah.
Really? Like a sauna?
No, a bath.
You think a hot bath?
Communal baths, whatever. But it's really hot. I mean, it's very hot.
It's really hot.
Somebody that's not grown up with that can't go into that.
Really?
Wow. Simply swimming in pool, in a cold pool. Some people
some can't take the cold pools.
The polar bear is going.
Oh, God, there's a machine. I get cold just looking at them.
The polar bear.
We were in Boca Raton, and they did it for Shabbos Mevorach, and they make like a Vasikin Minyan Mamish on the beach. It was beautiful, but you watch the thing. It's freezing. I'm in my jacket and towel as a villain, freezing. And it's like, okay, you're tough enough for a beautiful davening, whatever. And these Mishugayim come out. He's like 8-year-old guys in their bathing suits and they're walking.
Polar bear club.
Yeah. Polar bear. Yeah. All right. Average bath water, 101. Hot bath water, comfortable for some adults. He says 104 to 105. Hot tap water in the average home in a medium setting, 120 to 125. Yeah. Hot cup of coffee with some milk and sugar added, like where you could sip it, right? 125. So that's already Yad Saletis Bo, right? Right, a glass of hot tea that's almost too hot to sip, 165. A hot bowl of chicken soup, upon ladling to bowl, can be hot as 180 degrees. So hot chicken soup is piping hot. I think I was talking to Lawrence once. I was told by a caterer, I heard from a caterer, that they won't bring out soup less than 220. By the time it leaves the kit, it has to be that temperature before it, or else they're serving technically cold soup.
That's
true.
Maybe he means that it's on a surface which is hotter than 180.
Probably could be. Maybe the warming keeps it at 220.
Cool between the time they waiter works in the kitchen and labor.
Yeah, right. So these are real life examples, right? He says, I'm just bringing read you what he writes. As a general, one should suspect Yad Saletis and anything that's warm to the touch. Right. More of it should remember that the outside of a pot will not feel as hot as it might actually be on the inside. The temperature inside the pot is the decisive factor. Okay. So that good. So we're just setting up Gedorim here as to what exactly is. Again, for the solid food, it's Meichel Ben Drusoy. To take something that's inedible to bring it to that point would be an Isser Daraisa. For the liquids, it would be what's it called?
Yad
Lesbo. Let's go back. I skipped around a little bit. Let's go back to source number 6. Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. Shir Shvaz Kehilchasa, Rav Neuwirth Zatzal, brings down as follows. Echa Mevashel V'echad Tzole Ametagim O'Oife. Whether you are Mevashel, cooking with liquid, soup, meatballs, Tzole, you're roasting something. Tigun is frying. Ofe is baking with dry heat. Any one of these types of cooking, kol hamachshe davar lachila, anything that makes it kosher, means, it doesn't mean kosher, it means like in terms of kasher, it means hechsher, is to prepare it for achila, al yidechum ha'esh, o toldoseha, or through a toldos ha'esh, or a subcategory of that, hareze over al isur bishul. So it doesn't apply, it applies to other forms of cooking as well. Not for now, but they discuss in terms of, we know we did recent last week's parsha, lo sevash lo gedi bechelet imo, you're not allowed to cook meat and milk together. So what if I roasted meat and milk together? What if I fried meat and milk together? What if I did all these other types of cooking? That's a different discussion. In terms of Hilchos Shabbos, any one of these types of cooking manners would be prohibited. It doesn't matter how you did it, but it's all going to be awesome. But he talks about toldos ha'esh. So the famous example, you're allowed to cook in, we're going to discuss more next week, but just bring it up. You're allowed to cook directly in sunlight. George Kasai was telling me, for business, he was he had to travel to like South Africa or something like that. He was over there for Shabbos. So he asked Rabbi Brudny, I'm in the middle of like some, I don't know where it is, some place, that, you know, what am I going to do for Shabbos? So he told him how hot it is. He says, no problem. You take out your can, you open it up, and you put it on the windshield, on the windowsill. And it'll get hot enough, the baked beans or whatever it was, and it cooks direct. You're allowed to cook directly in the sun. Fine. That's not a problem. What's a toldos ha'esh? Here you're not allowed to do. I would not be allowed to do as follows. Let's say I had a flame on my stovetop, and I took a frying pan, and I heated up the frying pan using the fire on my thing, and then I take this off the fire, and I have a hot pan in my hand. I cannot crack an egg. I cannot make an omelet on that hot pan. That's called toldos ha'esh. It's a subcategory. We'll discuss more about that, what the parameters are of that. Derech Bishul, microwave, stuff like that, all these different things, but we'll get into talk about Bishul Acher Bishul next week. But that's another thing that can be done. Then comes the Me'iri.
Why is it okay?
There's a gazir, you might come to mistake it. If I take, no one's going to confuse, it's too far removed to cook directly in the sunlight to then now think, since that was allowed, I'm allowed to cook directly on my stovetop. If I have a pan, and that the pan's not on my stove, but the pan's like 2 feet away, a hot pan, so I might get very confused. Think of that, just like the frying pan I'm cooking there, I could put a frying pan on the flame directly.
I hear the difference, why you wouldn't get confused, but why is it okay even for the sun? Because you're still going to change the nature of.
Yeah, but that's not considered to be.
Not have you been in the desert?
Did they cook in the desert? I don't know. Did they?
Hey,
how do they nowadays? If someone's in the desert, then they probably cook up that way.
Well, then when they carry the dough out on the back and the baked
dough.
You
always hear, for example, that the stories of cooking the egg on the sidewalk.
Right. Yeah.
Which sounds like it's fine. That's
yeah.
Sun.
Yeah. Right.
Unless because the sun is actually heating up something, another object. I guess that's a toldos.
No, if I would put an egg, what?
If you take a frying pan, you put it in the sun. That's already asur min darabanan.
Yeah, toldos ha'ur. Yeah, I said not heating up on something. You're just heating. You open up the can. You know, there's no.
The can is a frying pan.
I don't understand.
Well, if the can was black, it probably wouldn't be. But you know,
let's say like this. Forget the can for a second. Let's say I took my vegetarian beans. I open it up. I put it on a plate. And I take this plate and put it on the windowsill. And it gets hot in the thing. That's fine. What? What's bothering you?
I think he's asking, why is the sun not considered bishul?
Okay, that's not derech bishul. Well, we'll get into. I'll explain it. We'll probably come over next week. I just threw it out there, but we'll clarify what. It's a whole.
If you could produce microwaves without the use of electricity, let's say, if there's some way. Wouldn't that be similar to the sun? It's not a fire.
We're gonna have to discuss that whether microwave is really called derech bishul or not. According to Rav Willig, theoretically, if you would cook something, if it's not derech, let's just speak it out, and then we'll try to pull it back to here. If you would cook something in a microwave and that's not called derech bishul, you would not be allowed to reheat that object on Shabbos because it never had a real derech bishul. Think about it. Right? It was never really cooked on a derisa level. It was cooked let's say microwave is cooking on a durabanan level. So I've cooked my, I don't think people make a kugel in the microwave, right? You know, but if you would. Not the first time. You reheat it. Because it was really right, but it was
could you?
People
yes,
make
you could
actually. But do that people do that?
No. I have kids that make like brownies and stuff like that.
In the
like,
microwave.
They bake it, right?
So in the microwave, so that's if that's not a deraisa bishul, if let's just make that assumption for a second, you would not be allowed to reheat that in a deraisa way because we'll learn next week about ein bishul achar bishul. Once something already has been heated, there's no problem with reheating it on Shabbos because it's already gotten past the Meichel Minasoy. But if it never was cooked correctly in the first time, now you're heating it for the first time on Shabbos, that might be a problem.
So something was cooked in the sun would have the same problem then.
Okay, all right.
Right? You wouldn't be able to reheat it.
Well, let me, I want to, we'll get there, I promise you. Let me just try to get one more, maybe two more. The Me'iri. We didn't have the Me'iri until recently. We didn't have the Me'iri, we had to buy it back from the Goyim. In the Vatican. The Vatican has the original Ksav Yad from the Me'iri. And in the 1960s, I think the Hebrew University bought the rights to the Me'iri. We had to buy it back for millions of dollars. They didn't give the actual Ksavim. What they gave was a microfilm. And from that microfilm, they were able to recreate and reprint the Me'iri. So you have in the Rishonim, not everybody had access to the Me'iri. We're very lucky that we have access to this. But the Me'iri says, like this in Hilchosh, in his Daf Ayin Gimel Medav, this is number 7. V'chol shememahir la'ofos o levashel. Anybody who hastens the cooking or baking process could go on bo'el omegis v'kedera. If you stir the pot, so stirring the pot, this is a big discussion, but stirring the pot moves the items in the dish, right? So things that were on top, now you're bringing them, you're stirring it up, you're mixing them, becomes closer to the bottom source. So you're hastening the cooking on that. A large discussion in the Kolbo and others as to is there a prohibition once it's already fully cooked, once it's no longer on the fire, but we don't do it. I'm not sure, I don't think there's a really good reason, niglis, to why one wouldn't necessarily do it in certain cases. But the mice is the minig is we do not stir anything that's on the flame. Omeisim kisui al hagedera, or if one is to cover a pot, right? Al hagedera chay mishum bish mevashal. That's also covering. If you have, you know, when you want to make, you want to boil noodles to boil water to make some noodles. So if you put the pot, we cover it on, so the water boils faster. If it's covered, obviously it keeps the heat in there and it hastens the process. So to put a cover on a pot, that would also be bishul, because you're hastening it. It's not only the actual bishul, it's cooking anyway. Say, what did I do? The answer is, what you did is you caused it to cook faster. So those are two things, again, stirring it and covering it with a pot. But when we get to the Dervonans about, you know, how to correctly raid the chont on Friday night, which is a mitzvah deraisa to raid the chont on Friday night. We'll learn how to do that and how to do with all these issues of covering and stirring and scooping up. But we just have to set up the general rules. Let me do one last source: is the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. Tavshul she'in mevushal kol tzarcho, or afilu rak sofik in mevushal kol tzarcho. If you have a dish that's not cooked entirely, kol tzarcho, or it's a doubt as to whether it's totally cooked, fukiderush al gabe ha'ish, and it's on a fire, osik, so you're not allowed to cover such a thing. Becholdov, with anything. Afilu im hasir es hakedera min ha'ish, even if you've taken it off the flame, osik, so you're still not allowed to cover it. Mikav and she'im kisui hakedera hu gorim hatavshil yoisev lizvashil. By doing this, you're causing it to cook even faster. I guess let's just we'll stop here. I guess for next time we're going to talk about the different kalim, what it means. Kli Rishon, Iroi Kli Rishon, pouring from like a hot water urn, what the status is of the water while it's in flight. Then when it gets into, it lands into a Kli Sheni, pouring from a Kli Sheni into an Iroi Kli Sheni into a Kli Shlishi, about tea scents, about instant soups and stuff like that, all these types of things, and what is the way to use it and to cook them on Shabbos. But today, again, just to quickly chaz, we talked about the introduction to the prohibitions of Lamates Malachos, how we can't define what's a malacha and what's not. Hashem, the Chachamim, set these up for us. And then the different types of heat, and then what the levels are for each one to violate the differences between solids and between liquids. And also that not only using heat, even if there's already a heat source there, but anything that would accelerate the cooking process, that also be a problem. So we wouldn't scoop out things or stirring things or cover something that was not yet covered beforehand. Okay. Shkoyach, everybody.